So, we come to the end. Oh, yeah. See you, kiddos. I was trying to trick you into staying. Actually, I was just concerned that I didn't have anything to put my iPad on. It was really in a different place. So, we come to the end of the book of John. It's been a long journey, and hopefully you've, you know, kept up more or less with the story. This particular morning, I would like us to, we're going to read a good chunk of chapter 21, but what I want you to do is just kind of listen to the story and imagine your way into Peter's shoes, okay? I mean, he's the main character in this part of the story, so there's a lot to going on here, but just before we start, I want to remind you of Peter's kind of wild ride, right? I mean, he was called, he was a fisherman, he was called. Jesus said, I'll make you fisher of people, no longer a fisher of fish. He's very eager. He's always there. He's trying to get it right. He's always there. Most of the time he gets it right, actually. He's kind of someone that we can really latch on to, someone who tries hard and finds, you know, some level of success. Jesus changes his name to Petros, little rock. I'm the big rock, you're the little rock. And then he has this, like, moment, right? Three, to be precise, where things just go all wrong for Peter. And Jesus has been raised from the dead. We're on the other side of the resurrection. He's appeared to his disciples twice. And then this happens. It says, later Jesus appeared to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. And this is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there. Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. We'll come too, they all said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing by the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out to them, fellows, have you caught any fish? No, they called back. Then he said, throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some. So they did. And they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, it's the Lord. And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work. He jumped into the water and headed to shore. And the others stayed by with the boat and pulled the loaded net to shore, for they were only about 100 yards from shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them. Fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. Bring some of the fish you've just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the nets to shore, and there were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. Now come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them bread and fish, and this was the third time that Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied. You know that I love you. Then feed my lambs, Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said. You know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. A third time, he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything, You know that I love you. And Jesus said, then feed my sheep. I want to stay right there, not go any further, and just sort of walk back through this scene from Peter's perspective, to see it through his eyes, to feel his emotions a little bit. Let's just dwell in this text from a particular point of view for a little bit. So the scene opens with Peter and some other disciples, not all of them, but some of them, maybe camped by the Sea of Galilee. I'm not sure what they're doing there, right? But apparently they don't know what else to do. So Peter says, I'm going fishing. Sick of waiting. Sick of not knowing exactly what to do. Sick of being unproductive, maybe. Peter doesn't know exactly what to do, but I'm going fishing. Just wants to do something productive, maybe. Problem is, it doesn't work, right? They go out all night, no fish. When we were in Nicaragua just over a year ago now, it seems like a lot longer than that, but we stayed right on the beach. It was gorgeous. But every night, like this was fishing village we were staying. Every night, these boats that were dragged up near shore, if you stayed up late enough, you would see people come from, you know, where they don't live, right on the shore. And they would come and stream in and get in these boats. And they would, as the tide was coming in, they would push their boats out to shore and they would just disappear for the night. And then they would come in every morning. If you were up early enough, you'd get to see them motoring in, you know, as the tide hit high in the morning. And I'm no fisherman, but I did, you know, I asked someone who has lived there and watched this, you know, go on and on. Apparently, nighttime is the best time for fishing. And if you haven't caught anything, by the time morning comes, you might as well just come back on ashore. And so that's what they're doing. And Jesus, perhaps out of compassion, maybe, or though maybe he just wants to send a subtle message that things aren't going to work without his help from now on. There will be no more fruit apart from abiding in the vine. I don't know. But he says, throw your nets on the right-hand side of the boat. At some point after they're hauling these fish in and they're close enough, or, you know, I don't know, maybe someone just realizes due to this miraculous catch of fish and takes a second look at that guy on shore, someone realizes it's Jesus. This is the disciple whom Jesus loved, told Peter, like, it's the Lord. And instantly, Peter grabs his tunic. I can imagine him like throwing it on as he's like jumping out of the boat, you know, and running to shore. Can you feel a sense of urgency there? He leaves everyone else to deal with this huge catch of fish, to pull the boats on. He needs to see the Lord. Perhaps he just wants to hear that everything's going to be all right. He hasn't heard it yet. Perhaps he just needs to be close to Jesus because he doesn't know what else to do or how to fix his failure. Clearly, he needs to get close to Jesus. And at any rate, he jumps out of the boat, he rushes to shore, and he finds Jesus next to a charcoal fire. Can you imagine the smell of charcoal? You know, like a charcoal grill or a fire or something like that. It's very distinctive, right? I mean, it hits me like a brick wall. My neighbors on the west grill often on their front porch with charcoal grill. And when they're doing it and you step outside, it's like all these memories come flooding back of backyard barbecues or summer meals or, you know, just good times, right? Days at the beach. Charcoal has a distinctive sort of smell. It's pretty powerful, at least for me, to bring back memories. But I'm guessing at this moment that smell hit Peter, and I doubt that it brought back any good memories. In fact, I think it brought back a memory, a very recent memory. the last time he was standing next to a charcoal fire warming himself. Just a few chapters earlier, on Good Friday, we read these words. Because it was cold, the household servants and the guards had made a charcoal fire. They stood around it, warming themselves, and Peter stood with them, warming himself. As Simon Peter was standing by the fire, warming himself, they said to him again, "You're not one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it, saying, "No, I am not." But one of the household slaves of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked him, "Didn't I see you out there in the olive grove with Jesus?" Again, for the third time, Peter denied it, and immediately the rooster crowed. Can you imagine it? Can you imagine being in Peter's shoes? He sees the Lord. He's been sitting there, doesn't know what to do. They go fishing. They spend all night, no fish. Miraculous catch. He sees the Lord. He jumps out of the boat. He runs onto shore. And then he stops. Might be running, you know, as fast as he can. His pace loses just a step or two as he starts, as like that smell starts to hit. And then stop. Imagine you're Peter, you know, your shoulders drop, you stare at that fire, you breathe in that smell, and you wonder, is there something else going on here? Is he trying to rub it in? Does he know? He must know that I was standing where I was, what was going on. I mean, he knew I was going to deny. Is he trying to punish me? Would he do that? And there Peter stands, I imagine. The text, because the text jumps straight to the others arriving, right? If you remember back or go back, you know, it says, you know, Peter ran ashore and then they came. Like, there's this moment, this little skip moment where I just imagine Peter just like, oh. And, you know, everyone else catches up and passes him and realizes that Jesus is making breakfast. I can just imagine Peter standing there frozen on the spot as the other disciples catch up and run past. And then Jesus says, "Bring some of the fish you've caught." Oh, good, a job. Get me in. Like, I need to go do something. And so Peter, you know, Peter rushes off to drag the nets further onto shore. I mean, think through it in your head how this, like, there's something missed, a little part missing there. And I like to try to imagine how that scenario worked out. So Peter brings the fish ashore. The moment passes, and Jesus says, "Now come and have some breakfast. Come and sit by the fire. Let me feed you breakfast." Okay, maybe this isn't punishment. Maybe I'm welcome here next to Jesus. And of course, something different is going on. Like, Jesus looks different. Something's different. I'm not going to cover this too much, you know, but text says they know it's him, but they still want to ask, "Who are you?" I can imagine them, the tension building as they're digging into breakfast around this charcoal fire on a chilly morning, and they're looking at each other, they're looking at Jesus. Are you going to ask? Are you going to ask? And then I imagine Peter probably ignoring all that and just wondering as the tension builds inside him, are we ever going to talk about what I did? And then after breakfast, it happens. Jesus takes Peter aside and he asks him a fairly simple question. He says, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And it hurts, right? Put yourself in Peter's shoes. It's not such a simple question, given the events of the past, you know, I don't know, weeks. It hurts because, did you notice what Jesus called him? He's Simon, not Petrus. It hurts because he really does love Jesus. He knows it in his heart that he loves Jesus, but it hurts most of all because he failed. He failed hard, right? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Then feed my lambs. And again, a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Then feed my sheep. Simon, son of John, do you love me? And there it is, a third time. This is the third time Jesus has appeared to his disciples. This is the third time Jesus asks if Peter loves him. A third time for three denials. It hurts. It's gentle. It's gentle, it's subtle, but it hurts. There's no way around the fact that it hurts. Lord, you know everything, Peter says. You know that I love you. And then also a third time, feed my sheep then. What is going on here? Is Jesus just rubbing it in? Is it part of the confession and forgiveness process? Is this really necessary, Jesus? Are you being vindictive because he denied you three times? You really need to make him say it three times? Is that what's going on? I think maybe somewhere in the back of my mind, like, those questions have always been there. What's really going on? But I think, you know, like, more recently in my life, I started to understand what is really going on here. And I suggest that what it is, what's going on here, is a very clear example of something that Jesus does very intentionally throughout the Gospels with the people that he's sharing his life with, the people that he's discipling. Very intentional. He's very carefully calibrating both an invitation to restored relationship in this case, and a challenge to a life of purpose. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. This is exactly what Peter needs right now. It really is, even though it hurts. He needs a chance to know he is forgiven, to proclaim his love. But he also needs a purpose. He needs his role back, right? Or he's likely to find himself staring out at the water again and saying, I'm going fishing. Notice the job that Jesus gives him. Does it raise any questions or alarm bells? It does for me, right? Because at the beginning of the story, Jesus calls Peter a fisherman. He says, I'm going to take what you're good at. You're a fisherman. I'm going to teach you how to fish for people. That's the original call. That's the original job. Come be my apprentice. I'll teach you how to fish for people. Here at the end, as Jesus is gently restoring Peter, he says, feed my sheep. Take care of my sheep. Peter's not a shepherd, right? Peter's not the shepherd. But here Jesus is telling him to be a shepherd. Feed my sheep. Who's in the shepherding business? Right? We've covered that. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I take care of the flock that the Father gave to me. I make sure none are lost. I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. Jesus is the shepherd. It's almost like he's saying to Peter, you know, he's like, I've got this flock, Simon. They're my sheep. My Father gave them to me to take care of. They're my sheep, Simon. Take care of them. Shepherding is my business, Jesus says. It's the family business. It's the business my father gave to me, and I'm making you a part of it. Can you imagine how sweet that must have felt at that moment? If you look beyond the gentle hurt that comes with restored confession and forgiveness, and Jesus says, come, be part of the family business with me. Peter desperately needs the invitation to relationship. He needs it. He needs to be restored, but he also needs his sense of purpose back. He needs his role to play. He needs a challenge, both the invitation and the challenge. I just want to draw those out so we can see where he might end up if it was all one or the other, right? So if we draw it out and we put high invitation here and high challenge over here. Just imagine for a minute if all Jesus gave was invitation, restored relationship, invited him. But like if Peter came and said, do you love me? You know, Jesus said, do you love me? And he said, yes, yes, you know I love you. And Jesus said, good, it's going to be all right, Peter. You're forgiven. I forgive you. It's going to be all right. Be really high on the invitation side of things, right? But have you ever been there where you feel like someone says it's all, they pat you on the shoulder, it's going to be all right, everything's, you're fine. But then they kind of turn away and don't give you your job back. You ever done this to your kids? I'm not sure I want to clean up after you again. It's fine. You're forgiven, but I'm not going to let you try to, you know. This ends up being, you know, like a very, there's a coziness going on here. There's this sense of I'm forgiven, but I don't know what to do with myself. A little bit wandering, maybe. On the other hand, can you imagine if Jesus said, you know what, Peter? You messed up. Messed up bad. I told you what you're going to do. You swore you wouldn't do it, and then you did it. And you know what? Things might be okay eventually, but for now, you need to go take care of my sheep. You need to prove that you can follow direct. You need to prove that you can follow through. You need to prove to me that you can actually, you know, do something without screwing up, Peter. Right? All challenge. That would be over in this quadrant over here. And this is very stressful. Right? Oh my gosh, I got to get this right. I can't screw up or I'm never going to get invited into that, like, that closeness again. Somehow I've got to prove myself. I think Peter started out in this story over here in this quadrant. No, not sure if he was ever going to get back, you know, invited back into, you know, closeness with Jesus, feeling no sense of purpose or whatever. He's just kind of maybe bored, purposeless. And this is the I'm going fishing part of the graph. But what Jesus does in the three questions, in the feed my sheep, is gently but consistently balance the invitation and the challenge. Do you love me? Yes. Feed my sheep. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. Until Peter feels restored and is filled with a sense of purpose as he is given a role. Incidentally, feeding the sheep is like the lowest role in the house, in a whole household that takes care of sheep and things like that. Like the youngest kid gets the job of going and feeding the sheep every month. So it's like, it's a low role. It's like you're starting out, you know, Peter, but it's still a role in the family business. take care of my sheep. Now, my question for us this morning is if we're living into Peter's story. If we're living into Peter's story, are we in this quadrant here? Or are we somewhere else? Do we latch on to the message of grace and relationship, and you know, we come and we sit and we drink in the invitation to relationship with Jesus, which is a good thing, right? But do we know we also have a responsibility to represent him? Because if we don't, we're living over here. We're living in this kind of cozy, not sure what to do with myself area. We're sure that we have a relationship, that we are forgiven, that there's grace for us, but we don't know what to do with ourselves. We have no purpose. On the other hand, you could easily, you know, read the scriptures, come to, you know, a church service or whatever, and feel, you know, don't, and not feel the invitation to grace. You could hear selectively all the things that you have to do to be accepted, to be called a disciple. True or not? It's easy to live over in here. You see, there's all this list of things that I have to do. And you might imagine God or Jesus as a really angry Charlton Heston pointing to a, you know, like stone tablets, like, do it, do it, do it. Get it right, get it right, get it right. For you, the Christian life, following Jesus might be really stressful. Like, every morning I wake up and know that yesterday did not go the way I wanted it to go. Now, it's possible you're over here and you're not sure what you're doing here. Just bored. But what I want, what Jesus wants, is for you to hear the invitation to relationship. That no matter what and how bad you mess up, Jesus will be there asking a question. Do you love me? Yeah? Good. That's all it takes. You're forgiven. You are adopted into the family. There is grace. But also that we have this business. We have this family business that, you know, of taking care of sheep, making disciples, representing the King. My hope for us is that we live over here in this really high invitation, high challenge. We sense the invitation of Jesus, and we know that we have a purpose in life to represent Jesus well with our lives. Now, if you're somewhere else, if you're honest today and you're living, you know, more one way or the other, let's say you're over here. It's going to take, as soon as you start listening to the challenge to represent Jesus well, I just need to warn you. If you're over here and you want to get over here, you're always going to like dip down into this. It's going to feel stressful as you step out. Eventually, as you learn to listen and calibrate and have people that walk with you, balance the invitation and challenge. But there's really no way around it. You'll go through this kind of valley of the shadow of death, we call it. Now, if you're living over here and you've got a really high sense of purpose, and you might even have a, you know, like, it, that can lead to a certain sense of, like, I do a lot. I'm, you know, like, a certain sense of pride and legalism. Like, I do a lot for Jesus. Look at me. I don't feel all that close to Jesus, but, you know, I'm getting it done. As soon as you, if you want to move over into this quadrant, which I hope you do, as soon as you do, start to listen to the grace and the relationship and the high invitation that Jesus wants to, you're gonna dip over here to feel like you're, you know, wasting time, maybe being unproductive or whatever. But that's just part of being friends with someone. You see, I think that if we pay attention, if we were to look back through the story of John, any of the Gospels, you'll see Jesus over and over again, whether it's with Peter or the woman at the well or the rich young ruler or Nicodemus or whatever. Over and over again, Jesus is looking where people are at and carefully calibrating both an invitation to relationship and a challenge to a life of purpose on God's mission. Where are you today, this morning? Where are you? And if you're somewhere other than way up in here, which is pretty likely because we're humans, what's one thing? If you're living over here in the kind of the cozy quadrant, what's one step that you could make to accept that kingdom responsibility to represent Jesus well? And if you're over here, feel like you're doing a lot for Jesus, but you don't really feel the relationship, what's one thing that you could like stop doing and start being with Jesus? What's one way? I want that to be on your mind as we share in communion this morning. This meal is both an invitation. Jesus was with his closest disciples, and he said, as often as you do this, remember what I do for you, that my body is given for you so that you can be in relationship with God. But it's also a challenge, you know, like the cup, he said, was a symbol of the new covenant, that covenant relationship. But he said, as often as you do this, as you gather, as you go, they don't know exactly yet, but as you go and make disciples, you're going to do this. You're going to have a purpose. You're going to be my body to the world. So as we pass this and we say, you know, the words probably on the screen, this is my body given for you, this is a cup of blessing, or this is the blood of Christ shed for you, just take stock of where you're at, kind of on that graph, and maybe make a commitment to make a step in whatever direction you need this week.